Hey, everybody, welcome back to School Sucks Podcast. Today is May 22nd, and what you're going to hear is a live show that we recorded all the way back on April 4th. And after it was finished and I listened back to it, I was a little apprehensive about releasing it for reasons I think you will come to understand if you listen to the whole show. This was a very difficult personal issue that I was dealing with. Not really directly involving me, but there were decisions that I had to make involving somebody else. And I thought, since it was something that was really on my mind at the end of March and beginning of April, and it somewhat relates to the things that we talk about on this show. It isn't directly related to school. So if you tune in exclusively to hear news or stories about things that happen in school, fair warning, this is not that. But because I was struggling with this issue, I decided to introduce it into our interactive forum, the Thursday night show, which we're doing tomorrow night at 6:30. We've got a lot of stuff to cover. So you can tune in at schoolsucksproject.com/live. And we would love more participation with that. But, people can participate in the chat. People can call in. And I was really looking for some advice. And now that this story has a little less urgency to it, I do still think that what we're going to talk about today could provide an introduction to a conversation about mental illness that I think should be going on in the forums. And if people have experience with this, I think that would be very valuable. I think this is, as you'll hear me say in the show, the kinds of things that we should be talking about. But I know this is kind of a spoiler, even though it's a predictable ending once you start to get into the story that I'm going to tell. But the man, the subject of the story, is today in jail for domestic violence. I just found out about this recently. This just happened recently. He apparently attempted to choke his wife to death and was taken away. And as far as I know, he is being held on a $25,000 bail. I'm not going to say much more than that. I'll let our conversation play out, and I look forward to your thoughts, and of course, I look forward to your participation. And I will say this, it's not the most tragic outcome that this story could have had. I know whenever domestic violence occurs, it's just horrific, it's tragic, it's traumatizing for the people involved, especially if there are children involved. And in this case, there were children involved, not directly in the violence, but they could have been. More people could have been hurt by this person. And, the fact that this person, that this man is now locked away, I know it's a strange thing to say, but that this person is in a place where he can't harm his own children, his own spouse, or the people around him. I have to tell you that, and I think you'll understand after you hear this story, that brings me some relief. And that was a challenge in itself for me. I don't really have a lot of time right now. There's a lot of things going on. I'm in the process of moving, so I didn't have time to really go over this with a fine-tooth comb. It's a little rough around the edges. I did try to keep it on topic. This was a three-hour show that I cut down to about 90 minutes. So there are, on the website, 60 minutes of outtakes from this conversation where we go off topic, and I really didn't want to cut out huge chunks of the show, but I felt like I had to do it to keep the conversation somewhat focused, and it still does go off topic a couple of times, but I think it works, and it helps the whole discussion. So some stuff I did leave in there. The rest of it is on the website. So that's it. I'll let this play. I hope people find this discussion interesting, possibly helpful, and I hope it sparks up some conversation. Thanks for listening. Take care. Okay, everyone, welcome to a live show.
Hey, welcome to the live show.
Hey, Corey.
Hey, what's going on? I'm in the chat.
You are?
I got my own username and everything.
Oh, that's terrific. I'm so glad to hear that.
It's very exciting.
So I wanted to tell this story.
Yes.
And I did want to get some advice, so maybe this can eventually land in the forums at School Sucks Project. I previewed it on Facebook earlier today by saying this could possibly lead us to some questions about, how to deal with severe mental illness in a voluntary society. Because I encountered a situation in my personal life where I'm really just kind of stumped as far as the next action to take. And I'll describe to people what happened. I mean, I'll start at the beginning because, you know, we obviously talk a lot about childhood. There was this kid that I went to school with, elementary school, middle school, high school, and we were friends in, you know, elementary school. Mm. He was real into Transformers. That was a thing back then.
Well, who wasn't?
Yeah. And he had this disability where one of his legs was a little bit longer than the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Very heavy drinking parents. So
I thought you were going to say him in elementary school.
No. And I don't know, maybe as it goes with parents, it often goes with children. So maybe that was part of his issue as an adult. But this boy that I went to school with, I actually remember this. It was really like one of those early memories that's just stuck in my mind because of this defect, which, you know, was basically a birth defect, one leg being longer than the other, and he had like a special shoe with a bigger sole. We were at his house one day, and we were playing outside, and he tripped on something, just kind of like tripped and fell and broke his leg.
Wow.
I remember this scene. So I was 8 years old. I remember him just crying and crying, and his father kind of seeming like not particularly concerned about it.
Yeah.
And some neighbor came over, and they're talking about like how bad this actually is. Well, he sits there, and the boy like sits there and cries.
Right.
So they're prepared. I mean, they called an ambulance and all that. It wasn't just like totally ridiculous. Right. But he's sitting there and he's crying, and the father's like, oh yeah, he's going to have to be in a full body cast for 6 months or something. That I just remember sounded so terrible. I don't know if I have the details exactly right. This was 27 years ago. This kid was having like a much more panicky reaction to what was going on.
Sure.
So
his leg was broken.
Right. And I don't know if it was a compound. Is that when it comes through the skin? Compound fracture?
Yeah.
All right. So I don't know if it was that bad.
Was there a lot of blood?
No, I don't.
No, then there would have been if it was a compound fracture.
Yeah. The mother comes home, and her first reaction is not to go up to her son. It's to start screaming at the father.
Hmm.
I remember, I could still see that. It's one of those memories that you can still like, you can still hear, you can still see. It's like that real, because it was like very traumatic for me. So as soon as she walks in, the screaming begins and the boy starts crying louder, and I ran and I hid in another room. Now, as elementary school went on, some distance grew between me and this kid. And as we went to junior high and high school, we went to bigger schools, you know, where a bunch of towns come together and go to school in one high school.
Gotcha.
So we had different groups of friends, and he kind of became this like vocational kind of kid, you know, and I was more of like a preppy athlete, golf team kind of person who didn't hang around with the vocational kids until pot united us all. Right. Pot was the great social equalizer.
Yeah.
Where anybody could hang around with anybody as long as they were getting high together. But through most of high school, we were in distant cliques. Like, probably didn't talk to him. Probably haven't talked to this kid since I was like 13 years old.
Okay.
I mean, I couldn't think of any reason why I would have. So anyway, time goes on. We grow up. 20 years go by. And he requests me as a friend on Facebook probably about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I start noticing that his posts are very angry almost immediately, but he seems to be a fan of Infowars.com. So all of his posts are tied to, you know, like, oh, you should be angry. People are poisoning your food, or the globalists are going to kill us all.
Chemtrails.
They want to reduce the world's population, that kind of stuff. So at least there was something to be angry about, or he was rationalizing.
Right.
The anger that he had, it was attached to something that he believed was happening in the real world.
Yes. That, there's a lot of that.
Over,
that's kind of what InfoWars is for, isn't it?
I think...
To give focus to people's inherent distrust of authority?
Perhaps. And I don't want to blame Alex Jones or anyone who's involved at InfoWars in the current condition of this person.
Oh, no.
I observe it now, because I think this is a very serious mental health issue. Perhaps some of his anger might have been fueled by some of the stuff he saw there. His worldview might have been, his paranoia maybe might have increased. But As time went on, I wouldn't really check his page that often, but occasionally I would see him post something, and it seemed like his ability to write, like to form even coherent sentences written, was deteriorating. And he stopped at some point posting anything about the world, and all of his anger was motivated by his neighbors that he was having problems with. So he would talk about, never say anything like, I'm going to kill this person, but would say like really angry things about how much his neighbors were terrible, all that, and just these rants. And he would post every 2 minutes, you know, I'm broke, I'm sick, just really sad, dark stuff. And growing increasingly incoherent as time went on. About a week ago, I think we were talking about this, maybe a little more than a week ago, he started talking about guns, and he was going to a friend's house who was a gun nut, and he was going to shoot guns and how much he liked how guns. And I mean, I'm just trying to piece this together from his almost incomprehensible posts.
Right.
He also mentions being on Prozac, which I believe is an SSRI.
Yes, it is.
Okay. So these are the drugs that are often connected to these shootings. So you have somebody who has this dark, paranoid worldview, who has access to guns and is on these...
selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors.
Yeah. Which, antidepressants.
Which have a... which is a kind a common type of antidepressant, probably the most common type, but, you know, you don't really hear good things about people on... If you ever hear anything about people on SSRIs, it's something a little scary.
Yeah, I mean, this was certainly plenty acceptable years ago when these drugs were new and all the rage, but there does seem to be some controversy now, and, antipsychotics as well.
People tend to do crazy things on Prozac.
Or
it tends to strip away the fear, which is good for certain conditions.
Like anxiety.
It's sure. Great from what I hear. But if you don't have anxiety, like a lot of people who have various, I mean, because not all forms of depression are the same. So you can't just give everybody the same antidepressant and expect to get the same results. Not all forms of depression are the same or have the same causes or even have the same effects. And on a lot of people, I've heard, you know, I've spoken to a lot of people who've been on it, and they say they just weren't afraid of anything when they were on Prozac. Like, they acted in really irresponsible ways just because they had no fear.
The other thing that I hear is dangerous about these drugs, too, is the withdrawal. And there's a list of them. Luvox is another one.
There are some psychiatric drugs where you literally can't stop taking them. You have to wean off of them or else you will have a cardiac arrest.
Yeah, and the withdrawals can cause agitation and hallucination as well. So there's a lot of really undesirable what-ifs that surround these kinds of pharmaceuticals. So he mentions that he is taking antidepressants. So now it's kind of like there's enough here that makes me very concerned. The other element of this story for me is that he lives in the same place that he lived when I knew him in elementary school, which is in the northern part of this rural town called Brentwood, New Hampshire. So as time went on, a lot of these permanent trailer type homes, like the one he lived in, and really like rundown properties were, you know, they were demolished or the land was bought or developers came in, and the same place that he lived in where I knew him in elementary school, where his parents lived. And eventually, I guess got married, him and his wife moved in with his parents and then had three kids. And eventually it was his parents who left the house. So what happened all around his trailer and his yard was a condo complex was built, and then a big development, like a cookie cutter kind of housing development, was built across the street. So my mom lives in the condos next to him, and these he's particularly agitated with these people because they've tried to use the town to get him to leave because he's disruptive, obviously. The police have been called to his house a number of times for domestic issues. His yard is filled with junk because he fancies himself like a junk dealer.
Right.
So he's filled up the yard of what is a rental property with junk.
Right. Old refrigerators.
Yeah, that cars. Kind of old pieces of, yeah. So for the condo people, this is an eyesore. Now, if you've ever lived in a condo, I've lived in a condo. My experience was that the people there, it's a fair generalization that for some reason, just busybodies are attracted to condos.
I don't think it's just condos.
No, I don't think
you put something that somebody considers an eyesore in any neighborhood, and that like people who have never met each other are going to become best friends over agreeing that whatever it is an eyesore.
But busybodies, busybodies on a variety of issues, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or they want to make rules. They want uniformity. They like having like their own little governments.
Yeah, I think condos are an eyesore, but.
Sure.
I can't get anybody to really take me seriously.
And I think maybe condos just make it worse too. Like this is just the flaws of human behavior. But when you put people together in that close proximity, they seem even nosier.
Yeah. And everybody has an identical house that are attached to each other.
Yeah.
It just seems to, I don't know, encourage like more love of uniformity.
And they're talking about this guy, you know, being a junk dealer and having this eyesore junk in his yard, which was like across a pond from them. So many of the people in the condo could see it and kind of hear what he was doing over there. So my mother had to install central air because putting an air conditioner, the one air conditioner she needed for upstairs in her condo,
mm-hmm.
was an eyesore for the neighborhood.
What?
So if you couldn't have these, and everyone had to install central air. Now, everyone gets a tree in their front yard.
Right.
Now, there's rules about what you can do with your tree. You know, what kind of lights can be on your tree at the holidays. Rules about parking on the street, like on the side of the street.
Right.
There's a lot of just nosy, nosy people. My uncle stayed with my mother for a while when he first moved up here from Massachusetts, and he was looking for his own, he was looking to buy a condo himself in the area. And he would park his car on the street. And every morning that he did this, a neighbor would knock. So you can't park on the street. The same way we have bullies in school, right? The same way we have these terrible social interactions in school because everybody's stuck together in kind of an unnatural way.
Yeah. And especially, though, when you have rules like that. If there is a rule that says you can't park on the street, you know, it's very different. Like if my neighbor doesn't like me parking on the street, tough crap.
But right.
Now that there's a rule, they'll feel free to knock on your door and remind you that there's a rule.
Oh, yeah.
Now, if my neighbor knocked on my door and told me that he didn't like me parking in the street, I would hear him out. Maybe
sure.
There's a good reason for that. But once there's a rule, there's no discussion anymore. They're just there to remind you that there's a rule and you're breaking it and you should stop.
Yeah, and maybe even to scold you a little bit. From my uncle's retelling of the story.
Well.
So, you know, I'm concerned... not just for my own mother's safety, but for multiple people's safety. I mean, a condo, like we were just talking about, is a place where a bunch of people are close together.
Yeah.
So if you want to make other people pay, especially if you're angry and you've kind of collectivized, I mean, he might have had a problem with one or two people in the condo, right? And the people in the condo, the typical busybody is very good at starting a problem with somebody else,
right.
But then outsourcing the problem solving to the police.
And they're also really good at outsourcing their outrage.
How do you mean?
Because if one person in that condo complex has a problem with this guy, you know what they're really good at is gossip.
Yeah.
And it's going to spread. And everybody, no matter how few interactions some of these people might have ever had with this guy or whether they ever noticed him or not, now they know about him. And now it's a big problem.
Yeah. And before it was this junk guy, it was this other house that was just on the property adjacent to the condos. He had a barn. They wanted him to tear it down because if the barn wasn't there, they would have had a better view.
See, Dark Trash says condos aren't the issue. People, statists, in close proximity will gravitate towards creating micro states of control. I agree.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I do think condos can exaggerate it with the sameness of them.
Yeah.
And the very close proximity and the kind of like, you know... I mean, I don't know many people who really like all their neighbors, but when there's a guy running a junk shop across the street, people get excited because now this is the first thing I've agreed with my neighbors on ever.
Right.
So they're excited that they have something in common with their neighbors because they feel like they should. They feel like they should be part of a community. And this is the only time that happens, is when you're united against giving somebody a hard time.
Yeah.
That kind of ran away with me a little bit.
No, you get the idea. True. No, that's true. It does exaggerate it. And there is that collective, that uniformity, all of that.
James 6:30 says it's a culture of thinking it's okay to control others. And yes, and the thing is, it's not even a matter of you controlling others. It's that there being an authority you can go to control others on your behalf.
Mm-hmm.
These people in the condos aren't really trying to control him. Not directly. They wouldn't dare.
No.
But there's a state they can run to.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where we're heading with this, right?
The police, zoning, the property owner trying to get, you know, the courts involved. So all of these are eventual elements of the story. I decided at one point when I saw all of this stuff, like there's two routes that I could take. And the first one is that I could do what most people do. I could call the police.
Right.
Now, you know, that's the world we live in. You know, it's not like I can round up a group of vigilantes because this
you could.
But this is the other thing we talk about. Look at where vigilantes stand in society now, where if you think that you can solve a problem, you know, a community problem or a social problem that might require you also to defend yourself. Well, now you're George Zimmerman, you know, the racist killer of Trayvon Martin. So ultimately, what wound up happening is I decided that it made sense for me to try and reach out to him. Right. Because if we're kind of maybe in the same ballpark, if he's posting stuff from Alex Jones, it's kind of like he understands that things are not as they say they are. You know, maybe he's taking it to some kind of exaggerated extreme. But I also remember like he liked a couple of my posts maybe like a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And might have commented on them. So there was some hope for a positive connection. So I wrote to him and I said, I've been reading some of your posts. Do you need someone to talk to? I think I could help.
Mm.
And it started out where he was, I guess, trying to tell me the story about what was wrong with him.
Right.
And, you know, I responded by trying to ask questions. I said, yeah, times are tough. I mean, talking about I'm getting evicted. I have all these problems with the neighbors, but very like, this is kind of what I had to extract out of almost an incomprehensible writing that happened over like four messages.
Mm.
So I said, yeah, times are tough right now. I'm sorry to hear that. A lot of people I know are losing stuff. And he was complaining about some people from Massachusetts who I agree with him are generally terrible, nosy, busybodies who come up here and they say, wow, you know, I'm glad I escaped the high taxes and, you know, kind of socialist police stateness of Massachusetts, yeah. But this New Hampshire, the taxes are too low and there's not enough of a socialist police state here. So I'm going to get politically active. And there's been a lot of that over the last 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, that's so I've been hearing.
So, you know, I asked him about who these people are from Massachusetts. You know, I also said to him, I have family in that neighborhood and I saw all your posts. It worried me. I was also worried about you. That someone would see it and call the cops. I don't call the cops. I think they can make things worse. So I thought I would reach out. Then it seems like he just turned our private message thread. And I'm not reading what he wrote. I don't know how I would feel about doing that, even though he's never going to listen to this and nobody knows who he is. But most of it doesn't make much sense anyway. Our private message thread, he started basically using that the way he was using his wall on Facebook to just go on these rants. And as the message thread went on, I realized that he wasn't even really responding to me anymore at all. Like I was asking questions, he wasn't answering. And it was at this point that I realized that this is a very severe mental health issue.
Right.
And is it paranoid schizophrenia? I don't know. I don't want to label it. It looked like that, right? Where there was an increasing distancing from reality. Like he just wasn't connected. The anger had just torn him away from the real world.
Right.
And he was in his own little world of, I don't want to say madness, but rage.
Yeah.
And, you know, eventually there was this interesting message where he said something like about being a dog in a cage,
right?
Being poked by kids. And when I get out of this cage, the kids are going to be sorry. Like real, like talking in these weird threatening.
Weird analogies. Threatening. Yeah.
And I said, trust me, that kind of thinking never makes anything better. I've had experience with these kinds of feelings, but you'll feel better if you stop plotting revenge. I think I can understand how you feel, and I know times are tough. I've seen a lot of your Facebook posts over the last couple of years, and you seem to understand there's a lot wrong with the world, and I agree. But here's what I've learned. These problems can all be traced back to, violence. Violence in people's thinking, violence in people's speaking, and ultimately violence in people's actions. My advice, don't contribute to it, and I promise you'll feel better. His next message, I guess he thought maybe I was being preachy or trying to diagnose him or trying to talk down to him. So he calls me names, and he brings up something that happened when we were about maybe 9 or 10 years old, where a group of our friends, I guess, ditched him while we were all on bikes.
Huh.
And this other friend of ours, who he went to elementary school with, who in high school wound up getting paralyzed in a car accident, was the grandson of the people who own this property that he's lived at, his family's lived at since I was a little kid.
Right.
So now, because he's angry about being evicted by them, he's also has this new animosity for this friend of ours from childhood, because he's their grandson. And all of his posts were like, that stupid cripple, I'm going to make him wheel into court in his bed, and I'm going to sue him. Like, just really, I don't know, very disturbing. So before, when I felt a real sense of urgency at first, so I didn't get a response right away. So I called my brother, who's also my mother's son. As that usually goes.
Usually. Yeah.
And
not always, but usually.
You know, I told him why I was concerned. I said, do you know anything about this? Have you ever heard anything about this? He goes, oh, yeah, this has been an issue for years. And I said, you have friends. He's friends with a lot of cops. And I said, do you have a friend who's a cop in this town? Are they on to this? Has there been any history with this? Have the police been involved before? I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Or, like, because there's nothing that I could do. And I eventually wound up talking to a friend, a Free Stater acquaintance who is a professional mediator.
Right.
And took his advice. And unfortunately, in this case, it was good advice. It didn't lead anywhere. So my brother said, well, I'm going to call my friend and see what I can find out. Right. So I'm not picking up the phone and calling the police and making a complaint that there's somebody, you know, threatening to do violence, because there's kids involved. There might be a wife involved. And I don't want, you know, obviously to be responsible for a trailer
hostage situation
or just a trailer driving by the next time to my mom's and just see this trailer filled with bullet holes.
Right. I mean, that's the thing about, how many times does police involvement turn an idle threat into a hostage situation?
Or worse. You
or
know?
Worse. Or do they just show up and kick down the door with a no-knock warrant and just start shooting?
Right, right.
You never know.
Yeah. So I'm not calling the police. So I said that to my brother. I said they're not equipped at de-escalating, you know? So I'm not seeing any immediate threat, but I'm just wondering, can you find out from your friend what the police know about this? So he calls him, back. He goes, you might like this less than the situation you're already watching unfold with this guy. He said a year ago or so, he threatened the police, he has a reputation in the condos as this InfoWars anarchist.
Oh boy.
Okay. So my brother says to me, when he threatened the local police, it became a county matter, and then eventually a federal matter.
Oh, dear.
Meaning that he became a person of interest with the FBI.
Wonderful term.
Well, where you can look at somebody's Facebook. His Facebook is very public. He has like 1,500 Facebook friends. He posts post after post after post. Very provocative things. Nobody likes it. Nobody responds to it. He has 1,500 friends. It's more friends than I have on Facebook. Which means, I've just because of the show, I've friended a lot of people. So
yeah.
he supposedly, this is supposedly, has an FBI sort of chaperone that he doesn't know about. So apparently, according to the story that I got, the FBI, an agent, rented a house in the neighborhood and just watches him.
Yikes.
And during this time, I mean, if that money was going to go somewhere, like in a just world, taking care of those kids, getting this guy maybe the help he needs, where it sounds like, from what I gathered, he was just being drugged. So eventually, because of, you know, him taking this aggressive turn with me, when I just kind of made the suggestion of nonviolence, because when I found out, like, by the time my brother got back to me with this information about the FBI, we had already started talking, right? So now, if the FBI says, we want so-and-so's entire Facebook records, they have a connection between me and him. Because they'll open it. Facebook will give him, the FBI, anything they want.
Most companies will.
Yeah. So I wanted to make sure that even though I was trying to empathize with him originally, yeah, you know, people in condos kind of suck, and I've had that experience, and it's difficult, and, you know, a lot of people aren't very good at solving problems, to which he was pretty much unresponsive.
Yeah.
I then made it real clear, like I read, that I am not a shoulder for you to cry on. I'm not encouraging you to do anything. And nonviolence, 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 which is what I was trying to prevent, you know, violence from the beginning. That was when he turned on me.
Mm-hmm.
And it never really improved. So then I talked to our friend who's the mediator and, like me, has experience with people who are mentally ill, people who are heavily drugged, people who are in drug withdrawal. I mean, I've had experience with all that stuff through the residential school that I worked at. And one of the things that was particularly troubling for me was I was at a loss. I had no idea what to do.
Right.
You know, and I'm worried about the safety of a possible family member and a bunch of other people. I mean, the neighborhood is filled with kids, you know, I mean, it's just, but there was that thing where I don't think this guy's going to do anything. I think he just wants attention. But what if he did?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That's what they say about everyone who does something crazy. Like, I didn't think anything like this would happen. Nobody ever does. Everybody acts like they think something's going to happen, but then when it happens,
nobody was ready for it.
Right, right.
Maybe a lot of, I mean, sometimes you hear the story about he was the nicest guy and he kept the nicest flower beds and we never heard a peep. But then sometimes we're like, yeah, I can understand how this would happen. So this is one of those situations where it's like, yeah, I could understand how this would happen. I could understand how a person like this could go violent. I mean, he's been saying, talking about it on Facebook for years,
And maybe without Facebook, it would have happened by now. If he didn't have Facebook to vent into, who knows what would have happened?
Right, because at least here he can see.
You can when you see your own thoughts on paper or on a screen in front of you typed out, it puts them in a different perspective. And I don't know if that's actually happening with him. I would guess it's not so much happening because it doesn't sound like he's that close to reality that he would think logically about what he's saying.
What do you think? How about this? If I sent a message to maybe like 100 Free Staters.
Yeah.
And said, I want you to friend this guy. And when you see him post something, we should just take turns saying, putting out some kind of positive counter message.
I don't know about that.
Why?
I don't think it would help him at all.
You don't think that being kind of inundated with positivity, or at least with a different way of thinking, like, because right now it's just post after post. I mean, every minute sometimes for a half an hour, another post that's just like, fuck, shit, I hate my life, I'm going crazy, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, please, somebody pay attention to me. If there was just like 100 new positive people, best case scenario, who were, you know, taking that and commenting, even just posting like, you know, hey, here's a positive thing. Here's a funny video.
Here's a kitten.
Yeah.
I don't know. I honestly, I mean, you know, you approached him with positive input and, you know, didn't go so well.
But he has a history with me, too.
Yeah.
So this was somebody who was, when we were in elementary school, he was picked on. You know, there were times where he was the butt of jokes.
Yeah.
He had a disability. He has this troubled family life. So I think that I come from a very traumatic time in his life, you know, and he can even attach me to some of the trauma
because maybe there was this one time when we ditched him on bikes, and that's what he remembers. And I do remember, I remember stuff like this. I just had another memory of him. We were probably like in fourth or fifth grade, and there was like, there used to be in this town, like just abandoned, I mean, it was a nice town, but there would be like an old barn that would just be filled with stuff.
Yeah.
And we were kids, so we would go in there.
Right.
And I remember he found, we found like a big box of thumbtacks, and he took them. And he just gleefully like threw them in the street where cars would drive over them. And we didn't realize that like thumbtacks probably won't
puncture a car tire.
Right. But he just kept throwing them and giggling. And like he might've been like 9 or 10. I do remember that. Like, wow, that was effed up. Like, I think that memory, just that visual of that had been.
But I think something like that, which is something any kid could do. You got to be careful not to take things like that and make too much out of
them. Yeah, yeah, you're right.
In the long run, that's not a big deal. I did a lot of like really stupid and malicious things when I was a kid, and that doesn't really translate into what's going on in my life now. But I mean, I would be really cautious. I don't think bringing like 100 strange, having a, you know, because you said yourself, nobody ever likes his stuff, nobody ever comments on his stuff, and all these new friends showing up in his feed and commenting on his stuff all the time, especially if he puts it together that they're all connected to you because they would be mutual friends. You know, I don't think that would, that's very chancy. I tend to think that would go poorly because now he's going to, then he would feel like he's being piled on.
Or would he feel like he has a bigger audience?
One of those two things.
Well, if you're just joining us, we're talking about ways to intervene, you know, in the world that we currently live in with somebody who's clearly mentally ill and possibly threatening violence. The other question is, if there was an intervention, do I know 100 people who know how to communicate in a peaceful and constructive way with somebody they disagree with online?
No, because judging by the comments that Free Staters tend to leave on political articles online, I would say no. Not just no, but hell no. Not 100 people.
I was on a Bitcoin forum today.
Yeah.
Just trying to get some basic information, right? And I'm reading these threads where people just ask questions. And like, as soon as somebody asks a question that might be available, that information might be available somewhere else on the internet, it's like, oh, you want us to just give you everything on a silver platter? Are you stupid? You know, like, really, like, that mean, like, yeah. Like, question was an excuse to pile on this poor person who just wanted to, like, has anybody gotten this thing yet? Do they know? Are there reviews of it? Really, really just shitty interactions.
I mean, I'm looking at, like, people who I know are friends with each other in my Facebook feed, and they can't even be civil in an online argument with people they are friends with and interact with in person on a regular basis. I don't think that's the way to go. Also, as James 630 pointed out, the feds are monitoring this guy's Facebook account.
They are. That's true.
So, you know, I don't know if you want a lot of heavy, like, Free Stater involvement in that. People are nervous. It's going to bring more attention to any stupid thing somebody might say.
Yeah.
And somebody's going to say something stupid.
You're right. I don't know 100 people in my life that I trust enough to diffuse a conflict like this. I bet there's a lot of people who listen to this show. I just wouldn't want to ask that of them because this is a dark place. And if you can avoid dark places like this in life, you know, that's great. And I wish I could have. It just felt like, you know, it's kind of funny. It was kind of, there was this interesting irony, I guess, that one of his last posts on Facebook was like, evil's made possible in the world, not by evil people, but by good people who do nothing.
Yeah. Well, there's also an element there that people don't consider is that when there's no suitable recourse for a good person to take, where a good person would like to help, but what do you do? What do you do in this situation? That's what this whole show is about.
Yeah.
What could you do in a situation like this? We're kind of at a loss. We've been discussing it.
Yeah, we could possibly take a break here in a few minutes, and then maybe I can set up a way to take some calls to in some kind of rig that might not be optimal for sound quality, but at least we could bring some other people into the conversation. Because I did want, I mean, unfortunately, we had these technical problems tonight. I did want to involve other people in this conversation. And I do hope that I can post this show somewhere on the site, and if not in the main podcast feed, probably in the main podcast feed, and hopefully it can turn into a forum discussion, because I think these are the kinds of things that we actually should be talking about.
Yeah.
I don't know how much I've opened myself up to danger, not from this person, but possibly like if I'm in a message thread with him saying, I'm not going to call the police on you, and then something like this does happen, like something does happen, you know, I'm nervous about that. But I also did, you know, I tried to cover all my bases, and I knew that, like, the advice that the mediator friend of ours gave me, he said, do you know anyone who's close to him? Does he have anyone who's close to him that you could try to reach out to that might be able to reach him? And he has a wife.
Right.
So I look at her Facebook page.
Sure.
And she's posting, you know, don't eat GMOs. I mean, stuff that but I kind of like can connect with.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wrote to her and I said, I mean, I can read to you what I wrote. Hi, person's name. My name is Brett and I've known your husband since we were in elementary school. I know I'm a stranger to you, but we have a lot of mutual friends. We had about 50 mutual Facebook friends. And it seems like we see eye to eye on some things. I'm not sure if you're still involved with so-and-so, but I wanted to reach out to you. Please understand this. I think this communication should be kept private or I fear it could make things worse. I have seen your husband's Facebook posts and I'm very worried by what I've read. I have tried to reach out to him, but I don't feel like he listened or was able to listen to anything I said. If you're interested in talking about this or need someone to talk to, please let me know. Now, the reason why I decided to go ahead and do this was it seemed like she was voicing her frustration with him, you know,
right?
Just from some of the posts that I saw on her Facebook page. So I thought it was kind of like a green light to go forward with something like this. Many of his posts could lead someone to call the police. That's not my style. From my experience, the police escalate problems. They don't solve them. That's absolutely true. I stand by that. The police are not trained to de-escalate conflict.
I think there's plenty of empirical evidence to support that.
Right. And I'm sure some people in the condos, whom he seems to have a vendetta against, are also better at creating problems than solving them. I know he's had a hard time, and I'm sure it's been hard for you as well. If there's anything that can be done to de-escalate the situation without involving the authorities, please let me know. Or do you feel that he's just seeking attention? Or do you feel that he's really dangerous? I'm sorry to take up your time if you're not interested in talking about this. So she writes back and just says, okay, yes, we are still together for now. We are staying with his parents. And then her next message says, we need a house and money. You need a job. I don't know what that means.
Maybe she thought she was sending something to him. I don't know.
That's possible. That's very possible, because it doesn't make any sense.
She just typed her message into the wrong message window. So, well, I mean, there's a couple good points coming through on the chat that I'd like to
yes,
put out
please,
there.
Yes, please, please.
So James630, frequent commenter today. He's a good guy. Statistically speaking, this guy isn't going to do anything. Well, that's true. The weight of statistics is against this guy doing something. However, somebody also probably said that about every crazy person
sure.
who ever did anything crazy. To think he will act on this stuff is out of effect of the media. We are not always impervious to its spells. I believe what he's saying is that, like, you know, as educated and as much as we analyze, you know, everything around us, we're not impervious to, like, you know, media influences, which I agree with. But I think, you know, statistically speaking, that's correct. Nothing is probably ever going to come with this. You know, I mean, every town has somebody in it who everybody knows is off balance and they cause a lot of disruption. They're, you know, but they never actually hurt anybody or do anything.
Sure.
But the thing is, when it's your family that's potentially in the line of fire from this guy who's, like, talking about guns and how much he loves them, how he's a dog in a cage getting poked by kids, and when he gets out, boy, are those kids going to be sorry. You don't want to rely, you don't want to just go, statistically, I'm sure my family will be safe.
Right.
You don't, you know, we can't really feel confident doing that. So, although I think it's true that statistically it's unlikely that anything, you know, there's not every mentally unbalanced person is a massacre about to happen. But the fact is, statistically speaking, some of them are. And he could be one.
Yeah. So that I mean, so, and the other thing was, is that if he, the slim chance that he does do something and I didn't do anything. And it's really hard. It's still really hard to think about, like, how do you deal with a situation like this without involving the authorities of today? Because I can't do a preemptive strike, you know, and I'm not professionally equipped. I mean, even trying to use NBC and show empathy for his situation didn't get me anywhere.
Right.
So does somebody else need to try? Is it because we have this small history where, because he's so paranoid and filled with rage, he could latch on to something from the past, some time in the past where I wronged him?
Well, that's something that people who are mentally ill tend to do a lot, is hang on to, like, you know, lay awake at night dwelling on things that happened 30 years ago. You know, 20, 30 years ago, insignificant. Like, most people wouldn't even remember details that, you know, the mentally ill tend to lose sleep over. Things that happened when you were 9. Stupid mistakes you made when you were a kid. It don't matter. You know, it happens. It's very common. I'm just concerned about the fact that somebody who doesn't respond to empathy is quite frequently someone who has problems, you know, with their own empathy, feeling empathy for other people.
Right.
And, you know, statistically, there are many, many, many psychopaths who have, like, completely lack the ability to feel empathy for other people, who never, ever harm another human being. Anyway,
And what I'm wondering is, I mean, he has a wife and he has 3 kids. And I've seen the stuff that he posts on Facebook. So obviously, he's not overly concerned with what he's putting them through. Right? And he's also not making an effort to improve his situation by finding work or seeking a professional help. I mean, from what I can gather. So
it's really hard to find professional help when you're out of work.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to find work these days. And it's especially hard when you're having some kind of mental issues, and probably there's a significant amount of depression in there, and then you just don't want to. No matter how much you know you should, you don't. Getting a job.
Right.
That sounds like work.
Right, right.
And that's a symptom of a mental illness.
Anything else in the chat that anyone shares?
Someone suggested you send him some M&Ms. I do not recommend that.
A candy? Or some M&M albums? I don't think I should do that.
No, definitely not M&M albums. Right. I think they meant the candies.
Mm. I mean, yeah. And
someone suggested a priest might be helpful. And also allow me that might not be popular in this chat, but I think... You know, I don't know what his attitudes are, but a priest being like a neutral third party who is not a temporal authority, but more of a, you know, moral authority, depending on your viewpoint, could be helpful.
The other thing about a priest, as long as you're
not committing a crime, he's not allowed to tell anybody what you tell him.
And, you know, not to make light of this situation, as long as you're not like a young boy, a priest is very non-threatening. And most, I mean, I wouldn't apply that same statement to ministers of, like, Protestant religions. I don't think that I think the sex abuse seems to be more cloistered in the Catholic. A priest is generally perceived, people are not, they don't feel threatened by priests.
Mostly not, right?
I don't know. It's not how I would want to deal with it, but, you know, I think... I acted on the advice that I got from this mediator. It didn't really seem to lead anywhere. I didn't know how to respond to what that girl wrote to me. It just never occurred to me until you said that maybe that message was intended for somebody else.
Yeah.
Because on my Facebook page, it says I'm the vice president of a company, which sounds like a job. It's not, but it sounds like
one. Oh, okay.
So I felt like both the communication ended with both those people, and I don't know what her condition is. She might have just gone right away and told him that I tried to contact her, and
right.
I have no way of knowing.
He could, I mean, who knows? He could discover that from snooping around on her computer. Who knows? There's a million things that could be happening in the background.
Right.
I don't think that a priest would necessarily be unhelpful, but people with the sort of mental issues that it sounds like this guy had probably don't have a very high opinion. You know, somebody who mistrusts the government that much probably doesn't have a very strong opinion about religion or God or Jesus or any of those guys.
Possibly, either. Possibly, but some people who mistrust the government have a very strong opinion of those.
That is
very
also
strong,
true.
Positive. So it's a crapshoot. It's hard to tell. The person who posted that in the chat, I'd like to hear what your rationale is. I mean, we've talked about it a little bit, but I would like to hear why you think that would be effective. I remember we lived across the street from these people who moved from Texas, and the dad was like some kind of oil millionaire or something. And he had two sons who were probably, you know, one was 4 years older than me. He was my friend with the three-wheeler. I talked about this on a show a long time ago. And he had an older brother who was maybe 2 years older. They woke up one morning and he was dead in the house.
Wow.
And they ran out of their house to our house. And I see this scene at the end of our driveway in the street where they're both crying. My mom is there. She doesn't know what to do. She brings them in the house. They call the ambulance. I was probably 9, 10 when this happened. So my dad comes home and he consoles them the best he can. He doesn't know what to do either. And at this point, you know, like the father couldn't be woken up, but it really kind of takes the trip to the in the ambulance and to the hospital and then a pronunciation of
right, for
death,
it to be official.
For it to be official. So it's official. They're... As far as the skills that the people there had, they were inconsolable. They were young kids. The older one was probably 13 or 14. So my dad didn't know what to do, and he went and he got a priest. You know, and the priest came and talked to them for as long as it took.
And they're from Texas. They're probably not Catholic.
No, and this was a Catholic priest because we were Catholic. It's so not preferable to me to go to the church in a time like this, but it does depend. I mean, the goal is diffusing the situation, right? So
the person who posted that originally elaborated, says they're trained in conflict management. They usually don't judge in these cases. They're good listeners. Maybe he just needs someone of a different mindset to talk to, especially, and this is my editorial comment to that, somebody, you know, non-threatening.
Yeah.
You know, I think this person could be onto something. And this is somebody who has just a Ustreamer 700892. So I don't know if it's a man or a woman or what. So whoever you are, I think you could be onto something. That's something that we hadn't even really considered. But yeah, and somebody else points out he could see it as a provocation. That's the real problem, is that any attempt to make any kind of, to bridge any kind of connection to this guy could be seen by him as provocative. And it seems like we have evidence of that already.
Right. Yeah. But, I guess another test would be needed, really, because, like I said before, we have history together. There was something in the past that he could latch onto about me that when I maybe took this tone, I mean, I was really trying to avoid doing this, but maybe with just the anger and rage, he perceived it as me talking down to him and not reaching out to him. And he said, "You only care about what's going on in my head because you know people who live in those condos." That was the last thing he said to me. Right. That was the most coherent of any of his statements.
Which is both fair, mm-hmm. but I think it's totally reasonable for you to be concerned about that.
Yeah.
You know? Also the fact that, you know, you couldn't have been concerned about it before it came to your attention.
Right. I'm going to see if I can set up some kind of rig where we could maybe take a couple calls here. Do I have Skype on this thing? This could be interesting. All right. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Welcome back to the show. That's weird if you've been watching us the whole time, but for the sake of people who are watching this later on video, we're back with more show. So I'm Brett, and with me is Corey, and we've been talking about a pretty serious topic all night so far. If you're just joining us or you joined us late, this kid that I grew up with, that I went to elementary school with, that lived in my town,
I became friends with on Facebook a couple of years ago. He posted a lot of InfoWars stuff. He seemed very angry. Not that InfoWars is to blame for any of this, but over the last couple of years, I think some bad circumstances in his life and possibly most likely some pretty severe mental illness has caused his condition, outlook on life, et cetera, to deteriorate to the point where I was concerned that he was becoming a threat to the people around him, particularly the people in the adjacent neighborhoods to the place he was living. And unfortunately, my mother is a resident of one of those neighborhoods, and he's particularly angry at the people in this group of condos because he sees them as the culprits that got him thrown out of this property that he was renting. So his posts over the couple of years, even though I didn't keep track of everything he did, I noticed a couple of years ago, he seemed to have a rationale for his anger tied to, you know, the New World Order and they're out to get us. And I mean, at least it was something. But in recent months, I noticed that his posts became just more ideations of violence against the people who are around him. And in the last week, I noticed that he was talking about guns and also mentioned that he was on antidepressants. That's not a good combination.
No.
And I tried to reach out to him. It didn't go well. I didn't feel like I was able, you know, despite my best efforts to empathize, I don't feel like I made a connection. I followed the advice of a mediator that I know who's a Free Stater. That did not lead anywhere positive as well. Didn't lead anywhere more negative. I don't think it was bad advice, but it just didn't work in this situation. So I'm kind of at a loss as to what to do. Corey also mentioned that the failure of this empathetic reaching out might be because this person is, you know, not capable of empathy themselves, and maybe they don't even recognize that, and that's even scarier, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's the only thing that, you know, a person in this desperate, rage-filled condition that would stop them from, you know, carrying out violence against somebody else, especially when they have anger directed towards specific people. It's very scary, and, you know, I really don't know what to do. And also, my brother told me that the FBI is involved. So it's quite an interesting story, and we've gotten a little bit of what I think is interesting, good advice about maybe what should be done next.
What's
that? Go to a church and ask a priest to go talk to him, but I don't want to put anyone in danger either.
Right. I don't know. I really, I don't think I'm any less at a loss for what to do here than you are.
Right. We can actually take a call, I think. It's Ooh. Not going to be the fanciest of technology. Actually, this is the fanciest of technology. I have an iPod Touch.
Yeah, that is pretty fancy.
I've installed Skype. I think I can play the audio through our microphones. It's not going to sound perfect, but it's probably going to be good enough. So I am online as School Sucks Live, or you can call 843-JOIN-SSP. And I'll put you on the show if you want to talk about this a little bit. I was certainly hoping for some participation with this tonight, because...
James revised his statement from earlier when he said statistically this guy's unlikely to do anything.
Yeah.
The statistics change when the FBI is involved.
Okay, well, this is another thing, and this is where things start to get a little weird, okay,
right.
In my head.
Yeah.
Is it possible that, this is going to sound really conspiratorial, and I don't want it to. Is it possible that when somebody gets to this point, because they're really, I mean, there is such a thing as social workers at a town, and at a county and a state level, there are people who are social workers, and they're not all bad people. You know, I guess that would be an attempt to de-escalate conflicts and improve situations before they turn violent.
Right.
I think a lot of these situations reach a point where, especially law enforcement, who has very limited skill, well, has no skills really to speak of when it comes to mediation and conflict resolution. Usually the way a conflict is ended is that they escalate it to a point of violence and then deal with it that way, either with bullets or with handcuffs.
The thing that really freaks me out about this whole thing is, like, nothing that's happened so far that I've had described to me sounds like something the FBI would give two craps about. And yet supposedly the FBI has an agent living, renting the house across the street.
That's what I was told.
Just to keep an eye on him. Like, that makes me wonder, what does the FBI know that I don't know?
Here's the other.
James expresses a concern that the FBI will attempt to encourage him to act in some kind of violent way because that is their MO.
Okay, that's what I didn't want to say, but that's what I just said, right?
Yeah.
That, I guess I'm just saying that right now, that I'm also somewhat concerned about that because we have seen a lot of evidence of that, mostly with young Islamic men, where we hear about these terror plots being foiled. I can think of at least four or five occurrences of this where we hear about some terror plot being foiled, and then we learn that it was a cell, which is usually just like a group of guys, that was infiltrated by the FBI and encouraged to do something like this. I mean, the first example of this is the World Trade Center bombing in 1993.
Right.
And that's documented. That's known. That's not conspiracy theory. That is known. You can go and you can hear the tapes of the Egyptian military guy that the FBI used. He was working in a hotel in New York. His name is Ahmad Salem. You can hear tapes of him talking to an FBI agent named John Antisev. So if you Google Salem, spelled like Salem, like the Salem witch trials, FBI, WTC, you can find audio of that. And you can hear him saying, look, I don't know what you guys are doing, but we built a bomb. And these guys have it, and is no good. So is it possible, and I'm not afraid to ask this question, and I'm not putting this forward as something that I have any evidence for in this situation, but is it possible that the FBI would escalate something like this for one of two reasons? One, probably the more realistic, to get it over with, right?
Yeah.
There's no coming back for this guy, so let's just push him to the point where he does something violent and we can take him out, take him down, take him to jail, whatever, right?
And if they do that before he actually does anything to hurt anybody, as James points out, it will be helpful to, quote, justify their bogus police state. That was...
Absolutely.
Right. Just every crime, whether they prevent it or they don't, it seems to... It's a justification for the police state. Tragedies they don't prevent... This is why we need a police state. Tragedies they do prevent, even though there's no way of knowing.
Yeah.
This is why the police state works.
And we saw that model with terror. So now...
And now we see it with school shootings.
Yeah, and really the domestic terror, the homegrown, this is all terminology that's come in the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And is it possible that... this would not be a tough sell for somebody in the FBI, you know, to go to them. And I know I'm really spitballing here, but to say, look, we need to justify our budgets. We need to justify our presence. We have to push somebody over the edge and we have to make an example that we can show to the public that this is real. Because the truth is, if we weren't doing this, this guy probably would have gone over the edge anyway. You know, I mean, we talk about a government, especially when it comes to this more forceful stuff. I've had friends who are in the Navy who told me they just dump shit in the ocean to make it look like they used it, you know?
Yeah.
So justifying the budget and getting the budgets to grow is a big thing, and it's a real thing because it means more power and more influence for the people who run those departments. Now, are we in the realm of speculation here? For sure, but that speculation about a current event or a current situation is based on something that is actually happening. Did I miss a call on Skype? I think I missed a call on Skype. Try me again. I might not have been paying attention. So I'm holding the phone right in my hand. If somebody calls, I will answer it.
No way, Brett. We've been burned by you before.
Is that what someone said?
No. James does say that the FBI are like talent scouts, which... is pretty terrible and true.
Yeah.
That is darkly humorous, James. Congratulations. Well done.
So this is a Skype chat from Nick. I think I have missed too much of the story to contribute something. I hope you're able to come to a constructive solution that keeps everyone safe. Gosh, I hope so too. All right. So there is this other possibility too, that if you look at his history on Facebook, I saw something about like a Second Amendment thing. All of this Alex Jones stuff.
Yeah, this is exactly the kind of person they want to vilify.
Right. So the talk has turned lately, even out of the mouth of Obama himself, the term that they're using now is the lone wolf.
Right.
Right. What we have to really worry about is the lone wolf. So we're not provided any context for stories like this.
Right.
Like with Christopher Dorner, we understand that he had a manifesto. Nobody read it. Nobody, I mean, some people read it, I guess, and it was available online. And we saw how that went down. So is it possible that there are, you know, a number of these sort of lone wolf agitated or manufactured cases in progress right now? Even if this, even I have no evidence that that's the case. I mean, we do, the all that I know is that the FBI is involved, and this is somebody who's done enough to, especially with our current security state, or, you know, it's not really, that's kind of a euphemism, police state situation.
Mm-hmm.
He's done enough that they could intervene. And we haven't seen that. And it makes me nervous. Because, right. You know, if something does happen, you will not hear. I mean, this is really interesting. Like, if he does do something.
Right.
And it's a gun and a political extremism issue. And it's not like, well, shit. I mean, we really blew this one. We had the FBI living across the street for a year.
Right.
I don't think we're going to hear that second part. I thought.
And the truth is, we don't really, honest to God, have any way of knowing 100% for sure that that's even true.
Right. Well, my brother, I got it from a good source.
Right.
So. Well. God, I'm kind of nervous even talking about this stuff.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I feel like I'm going to end up with a black pillowcase over my head in the back of a car. This is getting a little Alex Jonesy up in here now.
It really is. Somebody, can someone steer us back to
I don't know.
Out of paranoia. These are paranoid times. I mean,
see, James says Alex Jones will if this becomes a big thing, Alex Jones will tell the world about the FBI having lived near him, but no one will believe him except Brett. It's true. If this became like a national news matter because he did something crazy or was believed to have done something crazy or was, you know, set up to do something crazy, that is the kind of information that would show up on InfoWars and nobody would believe it because it's Alex Jones.
I wonder if I should try to reach out to Alex Jones.
Gosh, I wonder. Like, could that possibly help?
Well, I mean, anything that I saw that he put, I mean, he was real into that stuff a long time ago and just talking, they're poisoning our food, the New World Order. Like the real Alex, it was like his Facebook feed a couple of years ago was just a pipeline coming from.
Everything just came from InfoWars.
Pretty much.
You know, the crazy thing about all that stuff, though, I mean, I don't spend time on InfoWars. I don't think I've ever actually like listened to or watched Alex Jones do anything.
Yeah.
Except like when he's come up on the show and we had clips.
Yeah.
But from what I've seen, people resharing InfoWars stuff on Facebook, I haven't seen anything in there. I mean, there's some stuff that's like very highly speculative, but even the stuff that's not speculative, the things that we know are happening, like the amount of control being forked over to Monsanto and GMOs, stuff like that. It sounds conspiratorial because it's so crazy, but most of it is real.
Yeah.
All that like GMO stuff, yeesh.
So I think I can bring this back to what we were talking about before, where we obviously have plenty of evidence that we don't have protections from all the things that we're told about in a voluntary society that we'd have to worry about.
Right.
Shysters, food poisoners, violent maniacs, people encouraging violence. But the one question that I've really always struggled with, and I still don't have an answer for, is how do you deal with mental illness in a voluntary society? And
I'm still trying to find out how you really appropriately deal with mental illness in a non-voluntary society. People say, geez, if you had all voluntary society, how would you protect yourself against, for example, Monsanto or a gun-toting lunatic? But I see substantial evidence that the state can't protect us from these things either, or that it makes them worse. Like, what would Monsanto really be able to do in a free market?
I don't think Monsanto could be. I don't think Monsanto could exist in a free market.
Yeah,
because I think the reason why they're such a successful, large and successful company is they started as a government contractor,
mm-hmm.
making shit that killed people, or at least
on purpose.
Yeah, that fried.
Well, no, Agent Orange didn't kill people on purpose.
That was a crop poisoner, right?
Yeah, it was a defoliant.
Yeah.
It would make the leaves fall off the tree so the Viet Cong couldn't hide in the jungle.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for the children of the vets who were exposed to it, it also caused like horrific birth defects.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, I think that there's other kinds of mental illness that we should be concerned about. Megalomania, sociopathy, and, you know, the attraction. I mean, I don't want to... Well,
sociopathy isn't really a thing.
Psychopathy.
Psychopathy.
Yeah.
A sociopath is just a psychopath who never murdered anyone.
Okay. There might be some promise and just like our communication. You know, it's so sad, too. I mean, this all started online, and it was interesting, Corey, that you said, you know, if it wasn't for having an outlook on Facebook, would this guy have already acted? And, you know, are people becoming more enraged? Are people becoming shorter tempered? And how much of the connectivity and the information flow of today is, does that have to do with it? Because it's not like our brains evolved to jump ahead of this and be able to handle it all,
right?
You know? So I think that the speed of information for many, especially people who are kind of unwell already, can be really overwhelming. And the inundation of information, especially if somebody is already kind of, you know, on the edge, and then they find something like InfoWars, where really, like, I could tell, like, if I spend 2 days taking that stuff in, there's like a palpable change, very noticeable change in my mood.
Yeah, it does not set you up to meet the world in a constructive manner.
No.
I mean, it's better to have that information that is true be out there, but it's nigh impossible to separate the wheat from the chaff. It all sounds crazy. Even the stuff that's really happening sounds totally insane.
No, it's you're small.
No,
you're the protagonist, okay, but you're very small and the antagonist is very, very big and very, very powerful. So tune in tomorrow for more bad news.
It's, you're not even, I don't think it even portrays you as the protagonist. Like, you're not the protagonist. Like, you're, like, if...
You're not
involved. I'm going to borrow this from Patton Oswalt, but he said, like, you know, if this was Mad Max in a post-apocalyptic wasteland, you wouldn't be Mad Max. You are one of the pyramid of skulls in the background. That's you.
Yeah.
In the post, and that's what, you're not the scientist who's trying to find a solution to this problem. You're one of the people trying to frantically get away as Godzilla stomps down the street. That's what you are in these stories. You're not the protagonist. You're an extra at best.
Right. The way these stories are told and the way you're made to feel. And the only solution is
you're somebody in a piece of stock footage.
Yeah. Turn in tomorrow. Tune in tomorrow for more bad news. So you're right. So when there's nothing constructive, there's nothing empowering, when you already feel kind of beaten down by the world, and people do get into these habits of reinforcement too, where they just, that becomes the comfortable feeling with life.
Yeah.
And then the other thing too is like this situation with this guy that we're talking about, obviously he is unable to, and I mean, this is somebody I've known pretty much my entire life since first grade. Okay. Now I haven't known much about what happened to him between the ages of 13 and 35. Okay, but I saw him in some pretty formative years in a pretty dysfunctional family, and that counts for a lot.
It does.
And I saw some of his elementary school experiences, and that counts for a lot. Well, the Liberty Movement will attract a lot of loners because they will say, finally, here's some context that I can understand my lifelong social failures within. Right? Oh, I thought it was me. I thought there was something wrong with me. It turns out that the whole world is effed and I'm awake. So here's an
in reality, it's a little bit of both of those things.
Sure. And here's an even more extreme example, right? So now you have, they're poisoning us with GMOs. The New World Order wants to reduce the population by 75%. The everything is closing in on you, right? And you're and that's where your psyche is. Again, I don't want to blame InfoWars for this person's condition. I don't, and I'm not.
And it's not just InfoWars.
Sure, sure.
You know, the stuff is all over.
But then all of these problems that he has with neighbors, that he has with money, that he has maybe with his own family, that he has with his kids' school, all fits into this context of the world is filled with sheep.
Yeah, sheeple. You know,
sheeple. And I'm the righteous man. Maybe not the hero in the story,
right?
But I get all this. I'm awake. And, you know, everybody else just, I mean, I've seen him post things like, I wish an asteroid would hit the Earth. I would like to see everybody die. Not a threat.
No.
But, you know, basically, humanity deserves to be wiped out. That kind of stuff. You know, while we're talking about this information age stuff, I'm kind of haunted by that question. Like, could I round up 100 people to intervene in a really positive, constructive way with this person? I don't know 100 people. I don't know 100 people by name that I'm confident could continuously communicate positively with somebody online. And here we are, where communication has never been easier.
Right.
And from what I've seen, people have never been worse at it.
That's very true.
And
although
maybe before we developed language as a species.
I don't know if we've never been worse at it, but I think how bad we are at communicating with other people has never been more apparent.
Okay, well, think about it like this. Maybe there was a time when people were worse at communicating. Certainly when they were hitting each other with clubs and throwing rocks, and that was bad.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, considering the frequency that we can communicate, I mean, the amount of frequency that we can communicate at now, where we can always be talking to people, where we can seek out people that we want to communicate with, and all of the tools that are available for free,
right,
for learning how to communicate with others, and most importantly, what relates to your communication with others, your ability to communicate with yourself better, with all the tools that are available and the ratio of available strategies and positive opportunities to quality communication, there's probably hasn't been such a separation between the two.
Yeah, that I'll have to agree with. You know, before the internet, if somebody had a stupid opinion, if I didn't know that person personally, I would have no chance of ever hearing that person's stupid ideas. Now stupid ideas can traverse the globe at the speed of thought, practically. Yes, James rightly points out, good ideas can also travel that way.
That's true. But they can't travel if people don't have good strategies for communicating. I do wonder if it is possible to reach out to that person in a constructive way through social media, but I don't see a way to do it. All right. Well, we'll take one Skype, and then we'll call it a night. This is a very silly thing to do, though, to hold a iPod up to the microphone.
We would like to do it in a different way. It's just not happening tonight.
So what's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to sort of touch on the helping people through social media again. Just bring it up once more. I have not exactly a similar experience as the very long one that you described, which was very unique and hopefully doesn't happen too often. But I do have people that I know over the years that I've collected on Facebook that I've never had the heart to unfriend or ostracize or to push out of my social circle, because I've always thought that if I continue to post positive things and to talk about positive things, they see that too. They see that, and I hope that at some point it clicks and something maybe reveals to them that lets them, you know, come to terms with whatever they're suffering through or whatever they're struggling with or whatever dark paths they go down with conspiracies or anything else, to just come back to reality and go, okay, there's some nice things in the world. There's some positivity in the world. There's some purpose that we can find out there. And I think that we can kind of rub off on other people just through osmosis, just through sheer trying again and again and again.
Okay, so, yeah, here's my question, though. If a person is, you know, mentally ill, where they're almost running this editor in their mind, where they are basically editing out anything that's positive, and, you know, from the experience I had, almost attacking the positive messenger, that's a different situation. I mean, I definitely agree with what you're saying, and I wish I saw more of that.
Media we put so much content out there and so much of it doesn't even get seen by most of the people that we know that we're hoping will see it and that we get feedback from.
Right.
I've tried to make it sort of a general rule for myself to try and post as little as possible, if that makes sense. But when I do, I'm just try to bring interesting things to the table that make people think, which is what we, I guess, try to do anyway. I don't know how to articulate this better, but I've had feedback from people who've told me that they don't do much on Facebook, they don't have much hope in life or otherwise, separate people, but they look at their feed and they see me come up, and there's things that I bring up that have never been brought up to them before, questions that they have never thought of before. It's almost like waking people up again. But I think really people all have different learning curves, and that learning curve, whether or not they're dealing with mental instability or suffering any kind of mental issue, I do think that people will eventually assimilate the information they need to change things in their life in some positive way. It might not be what we think is best for them, but they have to do what they think is best for them. And yeah, they can get defensive, and that's fine, but that's usually from a place of hurt, from a place where they've been attacked before, and obviously they feel, you know, attacked by that. I'm kind of rambling there.
Sorry, right. Well, I mean, some people just literally are incapable of making a decision about what is best for them. They don't have a proper sense of what is best for them because they're in a lot of pain. They're confused, and they don't really value what's best for them. And that because there's something going on there that's not right. There's something wrong that makes it incapable of, you know, actually doing what's best for them.
As we were kind of talking about before, the people with mental issues that might cause them more grief in their life, cause them to warp reality in a way that is hard to connect with. It's hard to connect with those people, to empathize with those people, because we just don't know what's going on in their head. And the drugs make it even worse. I've never had to take any kind of prescription drugs, thankfully, for any kind of mental issue. But I have had one opportunity in the past where I tried a couple of the pills that somebody I loved was on, and it freaked me right out. The feeling of being disconnected from your body, feeling kind of 12 feet behind your head, this kind of tunnel vision.
Was it lithium by any chance?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
it was an antidepressant for sure, and it was just.
There's not a lot of those drugs that would really have any noticeable effect if you just took a couple of them. Like those SSRIs, like Prozac, they'll take weeks to take effect. But lithium is one of those ones that you just take one, and you could kind of experience those people are going through. But the thing is, the experience of being on lithium is hugely different from someone who doesn't have a medical need to be on lithium.
That's true.
if you're not bipolar, then there's no need for you to be on lithium, and you will not have. I know people, like you said, who've taken it, you know, with the intent of just trying it for recreational purposes.
Oh, jeez.
And I don't even know what possessed them to think that might be a fun idea. But
no, I needed to experience some empathy with the person. I really wanted to know, because they were suffering really bad, and I really wanted to know what they were going through.
Well, I mean, I have. And I don't think I've ever particularly shared this on this show, but I certainly opened up on Sex, Lies, and Anarchy, which is the show where I get super honest when they have me on there. But I have been on lithium in the past. And yeah, it's not a good experience, but sometimes you have to trade that off. You know, being bipolar and unmedicated is also a pretty horrible experience. And being on lithium is no great shakes either. It kind of, you know, just turns the volume down on everything, and that's how it controls your mood swings. But taking it, if you're not in some kind of like heightened state of emotion, whether it's depression or manic, it's got to be a weird experience. I can't even imagine what that would be like.
Yeah, the other thing too is with a lot of these drugs, that turning off effect of the emotions is very dangerous, and it's one of the great risks of putting these kids on these types of drugs
when they don't need them.
Yeah, and also they have, hold on one second.
They also have these, times in their lives, these situations in their lives where they're supposed to, experience some strife and grow emotionally. And if they're not having, if they're just sort of emotionally deadened through those experiences, that growth can't happen. And they become even more dependent on the drug for emotional survival and stability.
I get what you're saying, Brett. That's totally, life and culture is very confusing as it is. And the drugs just put that haze, that fog over people's minds that while it's needed for some, definitely is not needed for everybody, and we misdiagnose all the time. I mean, life is difficult as it is, straight and sober, right?
Yeah.
All right, thanks a lot for chatting with me, guys. We'll probably get into this another time. I'm going to try to call into your show a little bit more often. My name's Lennon, by the way. Dark Trash is just a handle, but okay. You'll see me come up more often.
You don't mind us mentioning your name when we see
that's
Dark Trash
come up on screen?
All right. I'm just, well, that's one time,
All right.
It's Lennon like the Beatle and not like the,
All right. Well, I really appreciate your call. And I look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks.
Thanks, Brett.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Well, so we took a call. How about that?
All right. Ustreamer 824043 points out on Facebook, if I post insipid, brainless hearts and flowers, lots of likes. Post anything about liberty and justice, voluntarism, etc., no likes. None.
Well, this wasn't our most positive show, but it was, I think, an important conversation to have. Any closing thoughts from the chat?
Facebook is a very apathetic forum. Lennon says, if I change one person's mind from the state, religion, or pseudoscience, I think it's worth it. That's also true. If I broadcast my thoughts on Facebook to hundreds of people and one of them comes around in some kind of way, or at least wants to know more. Oh, well, that's great. That's one person who you wouldn't have reached otherwise. Brett pointed out on School Sucks that hundreds of thousands of young people are coming out of government school. So what is changing one person's mind going to help? It's going to help that person.
Here's a story. Okay, let me tell you this. Of course, yes, it's going to help that person, and liberty is a personal thing for people first. I was just talking about this somewhere, and I think a lot of folks would agree with me that none of that other shit matters if you don't have as much personal freedom as you can get. And I will talk on the show in the future about times in my life where by my own doing, by my own mistakes, I put myself in situations where I had very, very little freedom. Not in jail. It's other stuff. I'll get into it. But freedom is personal first. And the idea of being able to reach one person, if it doesn't require a huge investment and sacrifice for you, I think is a worthwhile pursuit. I also heard Harry Brown say something one time. If you have if you are passionate about these ideas and you have a command of these ideas, you should be out there talking to people about these ideas, because you never know what one person who, you have all these ideas and maybe you haven't done that much that's terribly productive with them, but you give them to somebody else and they're multiplied by that person's talents or that person's ambitions, and you don't know where they're going to take them and what they're going to do and what they can accomplish. So there's this, there can be this multiplying effect. I mean, if you're optimistic about it, it is valuable to convince one other person, because they can take it to a wonderful place that maybe you never thought of. And that's one of the reasons why I really think it's important to try and reach younger and younger people. Because, you can maybe convince somebody who's 60 and they're like, oh, I'm 60. The way it is. I've heard that plenty.
Oh, yeah.
But there is, I think that it's a worthwhile pursuit to, if you have a connection with somebody, like a trusting, positive connection with another person, it is very, very important. And relationships in my life have ended because people would not see eye to eye with me on this stuff. Some people I give a pass. Like, I know my mom and my mom's friends, they're going to pay their taxes and they're going to vote, and my mom's going to get angry about Obama and think that that's the problem. And I love her, and there's things that I will tolerate. But like in a romantic relationship, when a person just was like, I reject some of the things you're saying. If I had kids, if we ever have kids, I would want to spank them. That was not, there was no way forward with that, you know? So I think that, first of all, having those kind of relationships and then finding constructive ways to share this stuff with people, it should get easier. It shouldn't be this uphill struggle always if we can improve our communication and think about the possibilities of somebody else taking these ideas and doing something that you've never thought of. I think it's exciting. And, you know, I mean, we reached on School Sucks, we reached about 15 or 20,000 people last month. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and I wish it was 100,000 or 200,000, but we reached 15 to 20,000 different people from the metrics that I look at last month, March 2013. So when I get frustrated about, you know, not making enough in donations or not getting enough downloads on YouTube, reminding myself of stuff like that motivates me and turns that frown right side up. Is that the saying?
No. It turns the frown upside down.
So yeah.
Because a right side up frown is still a frown.
Shit.
And an upside down frown is a smile. Also, it rhymes if you say it that way.
Right.
All right. So yeah, anyways, we were going to wind down, yes?
Yep.
All right.
So I'm going to cut it off there. That was pretty much the end of the regular show. And I just want to do a little bit of an epilogue. Even though I talked about at the very beginning of the podcast today what ultimately happened to this man, we recorded this 11 days before the bombings in Boston. And I know we talk a lot about the FBI in that show, the show that you just listened to. And it was interesting to learn about the story of this Free Stater named Rich Paul, who was essentially set up by the FBI using an informant to, really entrap him to sell drugs to somebody and then try to coerce him into wearing a wire at the Keene Activist Center. So this is very inside the Free State Project kind of stuff. But the FBI set Rich Paul up on a drug charge and a really concocted LSD charge, even though it was known and I think admitted in court that LSD was not involved, but that was one of his charges, and he was ultimately found guilty and is awaiting sentencing right now and is facing up to 80 years in prison. He actually was on this show once in the past when we did a roundtable discussion in Keene. I don't really consider him a friend. I've always had certainly pleasant interactions with him. I don't know him very well. This is really an unfortunate story. What's really unfortunate about it, and I hope people don't consider this tie-in to be too self-serving, because I really think there is something to this. What is the FBI doing, wasting resources, trying to infiltrate a peaceful activist movement? Well, this is when the FBI has a history of this. I mean, this goes back at least to the civil rights movement in the 1960s. And there's evidence that this has happened in the anti-war movement during the Bush administration. Obviously, groups that are considered to be hostile to the current administration are, I mean, this is in the news right up to today, subject to additional scrutiny. I know that's something that is being discussed. So the FBI use their resources in conjunction with the drug task force to try and set up Rich Paul. This FBI outfit had an office in Bedford, New Hampshire, which is about 15 minutes south of where I live and maybe an hour east of Keene, where all of this went down. Well, who were they? Where did they come from? They were actually the FBI counterterrorism division from Boston. In Boston. So in the months prior to the Boston Marathon bombing, the Boston counterterrorism division of the FBI has repurposed substantial resources to New Hampshire to infiltrate a peace group in the name of counterterrorism. While the Tsarnaev brothers are known to the FBI, the older brother has, I think this is admitted, I think this is in the mainstream media, so sorry to sound like Alex Jones, has a relationship with the FBI. The FBI is talking to him over the course of a number of years. So I just wanted to clarify that this difficult situation that I found myself in didn't have me fantasizing about the nobility or the efficacy of federal law enforcement in any way. I just want to make that clear. And I think that story accomplishes that. All right. Have a good day.